Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. The state budget is now more than 7 weeks overdue as House and Senate negotiators struggle to come up with a final spending plan. This past week, the two sides announced they had agreed on how much money to spend, and that decision could be bad news for teachers and state employees. Here to talk about what's at stake in the negotiations is House Minority Leader Representative Larry Hall. Well, Representative Hall, thanks for being with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Well, let's jump in and talk about the issue on a lot of people's minds around North Carolina is, where is the budget?
Well, the House and Senate agreed on a number, which is $21.735 billion, and that's about $420 million less than the House had proposed, and it's a little bit more, about $250, $260 million more than the Senate proposed. What concerns me, though, is even though we've agreed on a number, the priorities are distinctly different between the House and the Senate. And one that I've continually emphasized is the need to fund our teachers' assistance at the local levels. Schools are starting this week and next, and that issue is still unresolved. I'm really concerned that the chief budget writer in the House indicated that as a result of this agreement to this overall number, that we would now have to abandon our improved pay plans for our teachers and our state employees, as well as reduce the amount of investments we do in education. And we just can't afford to do that now. We're in a competitive situation. Our kids have one shot at this. We have one chance to do it right for them and to build for their future. And we have to invest in our education and make sure we have teacher assistants in the classrooms to give those children the best chances. So we've got a bottom line number, but we can't give up. And that really distressed me that House leadership would, in effect, give up the priority of education in North Carolina before they even got into real negotiations. I'm really concerned about that, and I hope your listeners will make sure their elected officials know how important education is to their children, their communities, and the future.
What are you hearing from school districts in your county of Durham and other places about the pressure they're under now? As you mentioned, getting ready to start school. Year-round schools have already started, but most schools are about to start the school year, and they still aren't quite sure who they can hire.
We get volumes of emails and calls every day about the question, whether it's from administrators or parents or teachers' assistants, all saying, when are we going to be able to have contracts? When are we going to be able to hire people? And of course, again, we knew we were $24 million at least short in funding in the continuing resolutions we did the first one. After I spotted that, I brought it to everyone's attention, asked that it be addressed before we did a second resolution or we did the budget. It was not addressed, so that problem was highlighted, but it continues. And now we're at the start of school, and some people say, some people's responses were, well, just tell the schools to hire them as day-to-day or month-to-month employees, and if they don't get the money, then they can just let them go. But that's no way to run an education system. That's no way to plan and prepare for your children's education plans going forward and meeting the requirements that the state puts on them. So that's really not a solution. And the schools are really in a bind because they're going to lose personnel who are going to go elsewhere to get jobs they can depend on for longer than just a 30-day period.
One of the things this whole budget debate raises is the Senate passed a constitutional amendment recently that would, if passed, would put artificial spending limits on how much the General Assembly could invest every year. And I guess you sort of raised it earlier about whether or not teachers and state employees are going to get much of a raise this year. What are your thoughts about the constitutional amendment, and would it make it harder to give teachers and state employees a meaningful raise every year?
The constitutional amendment question of limiting our spending is really one that I believe six states have already rejected that idea by ballot when it had gone before the people. It has not worked the one state it's in. It has not worked. It's really handcuffed them and their infrastructure as well as their workforce for their state government is in terrible shape, and they really are trying to find a way to get out from under it. And I don't think it would work for North Carolina. You know, we've already depressed our spending to the point it's almost what it was almost 10 years ago. And folks know that we have increased population by over 1 million people over the last 10 years. So if you look at what we're doing, we're making it virtually impossible for people to succeed, and we would lock ourselves into that going forward. So that's certainly not the way to go for North Carolina, and I hope that people will oppose that or not support that after thoughtful consideration.
Another big issue that has come up in the budget debate initially, now it's separate, is Medicaid reform. It's a very complicated reform proposal that's making its way through. It's on the House calendar. What are your thoughts in general about our Medicaid program and the continuing lack of willingness of the legislative leaders to consider expanding Medicaid?
Well, there's a bar that's been put up supposedly to say that we should have more efficient Medicaid before we expand it. And we certainly have Medicaid expansion that needs to happen. It needs to happen right away. And the question of being effective and efficient in our administration, and North Carolina has been one of the most efficient states in Medicaid administration. And that really is a false choice that's being made there. We can continue to improve the system as well as expand it and provide more health care for all of our citizens, as well as the jobs and economic development that come with it. So that's something that has to be discussed. Provider-led treatment and access to treatment is what we would want to have. A lot of people say, well, it's all about the profit. Let's privatize it as much as we can and let it be only about the profit. But at some point, it has to be about the service to our citizens and the health care for our citizens. And that's not always measured just in dollars and cents. Sometimes it's measured in quality of life. It's measured in the healthy state that your people may be in. And so employers benefit, et cetera. So that the idea of privatizing and just going for the dollar and evaluating it that way versus providing this service to the citizens of North Carolina who pay in so many different ways is key. And I hope we'll continue with the provider-led system emphasis.
Another issue I want to ask you about before we let you go is the battle over sales tax redistribution that would hurt some of the larger urban counties in North Carolina to give more help to some of the smaller rural counties. What's your take on the fight over sales tax redistribution?
The sales tax redistribution seems to be a substitute for what Republican leadership has done over the last 4 years. You know, we had a rural center that emphasized providing infrastructure and getting funding and leveraging federal and state funding to provide infrastructure to rural areas. And they basically decimated and eliminated that. The Golden Leaf Foundation, they've gone in and raided the funds they have to give grants primarily to areas affected by the tobacco industry's demise here in the state. They've gone in and raided that and taken funds away that they used to help communities that were rural in nature and had depended upon the tobacco industry. We failed to increase Medicaid or expand Medicaid, which would help in those communities to ensure they had healthcare facilities and other infrastructure so businesses could locate there. So we've savaged the hospitals and the infrastructure and the opportunities to support development in rural areas. And now they come up with this gimmick to say, we're going to fix that by redistributing the tax revenue from where it's achieved and spreading it out to other places, thereby making these folks dependent upon a quote handout from urban areas, but never making them able to be self-sufficient and generate their own needs. And the amount of money we're talking about is not enough for them to do any significant economic development or leverage any. So we have so savaged our rural areas by the way we've handled programs, and now we come with this Band-Aid to put over the problem. It's virtually illusory. I hope people don't fall for this, and we go back to trying to build up our rural areas and provide them the infrastructure they need to be successful.
Finally, Representative Hall, before I let you go, I want to ask you about the voter ID lawsuit that's being heard in Winston-Salem. Now there are reports there is a proposed settlement agreement that both sides might reach. What are your thoughts just about the issue and what's really at stake here in the decision that this court makes?
Well, the question of voter ID, again, did not become an issue until after folks showed up and voted. And a lot of the folks who defend voter ID, even though there's no issues of in-person voter fraud, which supposedly the voter ID is supposed to be a bar against, there are no instances of that. And if we had any other program that was as successful as our voting program, we would give whoever ran it a Nobel Prize. So our voting program that we had before we started down that road had virtually no problems. We have one of the lowest voter turnouts of any industrialized nation. And in fact, we have the opposite. In many other countries, they require you to vote or face some kind of sanctions if you don't go vote. We're doing the opposite in trying to prevent people from voting. So that makes no sense. The voter ID lawsuit, now that they're talking about a settlement, the settlement that is proposed, I think, will be one that's going to be hard to reach because the idea of voter identification is such a bar, such an inconvenience, and such an unneeded item that we should really try to eliminate that bar. The cost that is spent by community organizations and volunteers is never figured in. How much does it cost to go through all the extra hoops to get voter turnout up to what it was last cycle in spite of these voter identification bars and barriers? And so that never really gets considered. It's a tremendous cost we pay in human capital and community organizations efforts that could be directed to something else, health, education, other areas, instead of trying to just exercise the franchise that's supposed to be guaranteed under our Constitution.
Well, let's hope that the court does the right thing. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you for all your continued efforts to inform, and I hope they'll be informed and be involved.
Up next, the push for more accountability in the state school voucher plan. Stay with us.